seeing decor recommendations for St. Peter Basilica. New stained glass window recommendations. Number one, Michael Jordan shot over the Jazz to win the finals in 98. I've also seen the slam dunk contest, the Air Jordan logo. The latest one I'm seeing here is a new stained glass window suggested to be installed at St. Peter Basilica. It's Chris Jenkins hitting that game winner over North Carolina in the national championship game. That's the other thing. Pope Leo went to Villanova. Somebody in the text line said, so does this mean if the Bears don't do well, Ben Johnson will not only be excommunicated, but on a totally different kind of hot seat? Yikes. He's going to be paying close attention. 100%. The Vatican might need to get the NFL Sunday ticket package. That might happen. That might be a recommendation by Pope Leo. Hey, I got to get my Bears on Sunday, all right? Make sure that that's going on here at the Vatican. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight. As I said earlier, as I said this week, with Cody and Gold being out on the midday show, they're out in California for a wedding. Jay Binkley and myself have been hosting the midday show. We hosted Tuesday, Wednesday, yesterday, and we will be back hosting tomorrow. We also hosted today. And earlier today, we had a chance to visit with NASCAR driver Dustin Larson. Of course, we got the race out at the Speedway this weekend. So Bink wanted to have a NASCAR driver on. I admit I used to watch a lot of NASCAR when I was a kid. I don't as much anymore. I don't know much about the sport. I don't follow it closely. But Bink and the producer of Cody and Gold in the middays, Drew Nixon, sat down and had about a 10-minute conversation with him this morning. So I want to replay that interview for you guys coming up at about 7:30 tonight. So make sure you guys stick around for that one. But I teased this in the first hour of the show, and I want to talk about it a little bit right now. We've got some history that was made in the NFL today. Jaden Higgins, a rookie wide receiver for the Houston Texans, has now become the first second-round pick in NFL history to sign a fully guaranteed contract. The Iowa State former Iowa State running or wide receiver signed for 4 years, $11.7 million, fully guaranteed. In years past, and traditionally, and always, first-round picks have been the only ones that could sign fully guaranteed contracts. But according to ESPN and the Texans and Higgins' agent, Chris Cabot of Equity Sports, the Texans general manager, Nick Caserio, had no issues in making Higgins' contract fully guaranteed. Now, he was the 34th overall pick, and a lot of people thought that he could be a guy that was taken in the first round. His final year with the Cyclones, he had 10 receiving touchdowns and amassed 1,183 receiving yards. He's got great size, great hands. I mean, 6'4", 215. I hate having to compliment a guy from Iowa State, but when you make history, you make history. So good on Jaden Higgins, and I wonder if it will begin more of a trend. We may begin to see more early second-round picks signing guaranteed contracts at this point. I mean, this was an unprecedented move in the history of the NFL. Once something has become precedented, then here we go. The floodgates open, and we may see more and more of that as we go along. All right, time for me to talk about it. The Boston Celtics are absolutely catastrophically choking right now. Eastern Conference semifinals, after the Celtics amassed a 20-point lead in Game 1, they wind up losing by 3 in overtime. And then last night, after amassing yet another massive lead, blow it and lose to the Knicks 91-90. The defending NBA champions, a 61-win basketball team, is now down 2-0 in a best-of-seven series against one of their biggest rivals in the New York Knicks. And the biggest reason why? they continue to take and not make three-pointers. Jacob, the Celtics have attempted 100 threes in the first two games of this series. They've made 25 of them.
Yeah, they're not too many made off of that being a good percentage, but yes, they're a team where, I mean, I'm seeing memes of the dude perfect when they're doing basketball stereotypes and the big man who only steps out and shoots threes, and they're transitioning that to Jason Tatum, and it's like, I can see how that can be really, really annoying when you have a 6'8", bigger than everybody, gets a mismatch and doesn't drive to the paint.
Yeah, Celtics shot 10 of 40 from the three-point line last night in Game 2. They only shot 36% from the floor as a team. It's Joe Mazzulla's philosophy. He's been very open and honest about it, that the analytics point to shooting the three. Analytically, it makes the most sense, right? It garners you more points. You could, if you make 10 threes at a, you know, you shoot 10 threes at a 40% clip, you amass 12 points. If you shoot 10 twos at a 60% clip, you amass 12 points. And that's not a guarantee that you're going to shoot and make 6 out of every 10 two-pointers. But at a certain point, you got to take a look in the mirror and be like, hey, shots just aren't falling. It happens. Sometimes it's not your night. Sometimes it's not your nights. So far, it hasn't been the nights, plural, for the Boston Celtics. Work the ball inside. You have opportunities. Karl Anthony Towns is not traditionally known as this massive interior defensive presence. He's arguably the best perimeter shooting center ever, but he's not a rim protector. Work the ball inside. Jason Tatum, 6'9". Jaylen Brown, 6'7", 6'8". Al Horford, 6'10", 6'11". Kristaps Porzingis is 7'3". Derek White is 6'5", 6'6". And yet you're still settling for shots outside the arc. Individual three-point shooters for the Celtics last night. Jason Tatum, 1-for-5, 20%. Al Horford, 0-for-5. Drew Holiday, 0-for-2. Derek White, 3-for-11. I think that's like 27%, 28%, 29%. Jaylen Brown, 2-for-7. Luke Kornet, who played 18 minutes, did not attempt a 3. Good for him. Kristaps Porzingis took and made his only 3-point attempt. He was 1-for-1. Peyton Pritchard, 3-for-9, 33%. Kristaps Porzingis it boggles the mind with him a little bit. Because a few months ago, and somebody brought this up this morning when we were discussing this, he had the illness that he was dealing with, right? And he missed some time because he was a little bit sickly. But he came back after the illness and played good minutes. I mean, he played in 5 games against the Orlando Magic. Porzingis played 26 minutes, 34 minutes, 34 minutes, 22 minutes, 21 minutes. Through the first two games of this Eastern Conference semifinal against the Knicks, 13 minutes, 14 minutes. What happened? Why is he playing 15 minutes a game when he was playing at least half the game a week ago, 2 weeks ago? If the illness he had was 2 or 3 months ago. He's a guy who averaged 19-7 this year. Not to mention the fact he's 7'2". That's a rim protector. That's a guy who's going to make it tough on the interior for Jalen Brunson when he tries to dribble drive McCall Bridges and Josh Hart and Karl Anthony Towns when they try to finish at the cup. He's not out there on the floor. I don't know, man. All year long, I've said that the Celtics are the team to beat in the NBA. And I still think that the Celtics win this series. I still believe that. Maybe I'm delusional. Maybe I'm just, you know, my fandom's peaking. I don't know. I still think the Celtics win this series. I still think the Celtics are the better basketball team, top to bottom. But you either got to start making threes or you got to stop taking them. And I'm not sure what the answer is. Somehow they have it worse than anybody in the playoffs right now. And that includes the freaking Denver Nuggets, who lost by 43 last night. Game 2, Western Conference semifinals, Oklahoma City put their foot on the gas and never took it off, man. Beating Denver 149-106. They were up 45-21 at the end of the first quarter. Shea had 34 points. He was 11 of 13 shooting. He made all 11 free throws he attempted. He also accounted for 8 assists and 4 rebounds. Chet Holmgren had a double-double, 15 and 11. All 5 starters for the Oklahoma City Thunder finished in double figures. Isaiah Hartenstein had 14, Jalen Williams had 17, and Lou Dort had 12. They even had 3 guys off the bench give you double figures. Isaiah Joe had 14, Aaron Wiggins had 10, and Ajay Mitchell had 10. As the Thunder shot 56% from the field, 44% from the three-point line, and made almost 92% of their free throws. Meanwhile, for the Nuggets, it was an off night for everybody. Jokic had 17 on 16 shots. He had 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Next leading scorer, the Nuggets' leading scorer was Russell Westbrook off the bench, who scored 19 points on 5 of 11 shooting. He was 8 of 10 from the arc. His plus-minus was a minus 30, and he was their leading scorer. Jamal Murray had 14. Aaron Gordon had 10. I had a feeling that Oklahoma City was going to bounce back in this game. I didn't expect it to be this level. I thought they might cover the spread, which was, I think, what, 10.5 last night against Denver? But good God, to beat a team by 43 is unbelievable, especially when the best player on the planet is on the opposition. I didn't expect them to bounce back like that. But again, I expected Boston to bounce back last night and win game 2 at home. Now you're down 2-0 and you got to go to New York. Could get worse, I guess. For example, the Golden State Warriors, who, after winning game 1 against the Timberwolves, are now going to have to compete in at least the next 3 games of this series without their best player. Steph Curry is expected to miss at least a week with his injury. So the T-Wolves hosting the Warriors tonight. That game begins in about 15 minutes over on TNT, True TV, or if you have the Max, the HBO app, you can watch it on there. As the Timberwolves are looking to bounce back after a difficult loss in game 1, but they get to try to bounce back without the best shooter in NBA history playing against them. Of course, on Friday, you'll have a renewal of Cavs-Pacers, 6:30 tomorrow night. Pacers up 2-0, 2 historic, heroic comeback efforts for the Pacers so far in this series, as we may end up seeing the top 2 teams in the Eastern Conference not get to the Eastern Conference Finals. People have been penciling Celtics-Cavs all year long in the Eastern Conference Final. Neither one of them may get there at this point after they both go down 2-0. And then you've got Thunder Nuggets at 9:00 tomorrow night on ESPN for a crucial game 3 for both sides. Nuggets get a game 3 win. They can extend the series even further, put more pressure on Oklahoma City. But if the Thunder win game 3 in Denver, you've got some momentum. You can try to catapult that into maybe winning this thing in 5 or 6 games and get yourself to an Eastern Conference final. 913-586-7965 is our number. 785 said, "Sorry, Logan, but Jason Tatum is not a dog. Jalen Brunson is." Hey, come on. Get off my boy Jay Tatum's back. That's a Missouri native right there, folks. Come on. I know he's from St. Louis. I get it. He's from the other side of I-70, but he's a Mizzou guy. Missouri guy, not a Mizzou guy. He went to Chaminade College Prep. I actually played in a couple of AAU tournaments growing up against Jason Tatum. One that I know of for sure. And he was unbelievable at that age, too. Somebody else at 816 in the text line said, "If Kansas City gets a new NBA team in your lifetime, will you switch fandom from Boston to Kansas City?" If the tickets are cheap enough. If I can go to NBA games on a regular basis in Kansas City, yeah, I'll become of fan of whoever Kansas City's NBA team is. Yes. All right, now that I have a chance to think about it, yeah, to answer your question, I would. I would still have, you know, love in my heart and maybe a slight rooting interest in the Boston Celtics, mostly because if Kansas City were to get an NBA team, more than likely they would be put in the Western Conference. I just geographically speaking, looking at how the divisions and the conferences are broken up, I think they would more than likely be a Western Conference team. So I could still, you know, have some love in my heart for the Boston Celtics, unless somehow 50 years down the road there was an opportunity for the Celtics and a Kansas City based NBA team to compete in the finals, and then I would have to look inward. I would have some demons to conquer in my soul and in my heart in that conversation. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. When we come back, I'm going to replay an interview from earlier today. Jay Binkley and Drew Nixon and myself on the hosting the midday show, Cody and Gold this week. Both those guys are out. We had a chance to visit with Dustin Larson, one of the better drivers, if not the best driver in NASCAR today, in preparation for the upcoming race at Kansas Speedway. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City Sports, 96.5 The Fan. Get ready, Vatican City, because America's coming. Somebody put up on Twitter, the Vatican City after electing a new pope. Across the street, there will now be a Costco. Next to a Waffle House. Next to a Buc-ee's. America! That's the one. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Want to throw out a correction real quick. Subconscious Freudian slip of sorts, I guess you could call it. I continue to refer to the NASCAR driver that we visited with earlier today on Cody and Gold as Dustin Larson. It's Kyle Larson. Apologize. Kyle Larson. Not Dustin Larson. My subconscious there is because when I was working in Springfield previously, there's a high school girls basketball program, one of the best in Missouri, Stratford Lady Indians. Look them up on the Mitchell website. It's one of the perennial best programs in girls basketball across the state. Their head coach is Dustin Larson. And I interviewed him many, many times over my years there in Springfield. So I saw Larson and I guess my brain automatically went there. But earlier today on Cody and Gold, myself and Jay Binkley were filling in this week for the guys who are out in California for a wedding. We had a chance to get Kyle Larson on the show. And I'm not the biggest NASCAR fan, so I kind of stepped aside for a moment and allowed Drew Nixon, the producer of the Midday Show, who is a big NASCAR fan, and Bink to sit down and chat with him for just a few minutes in preparation for a big-time event coming up at the Speedway. And I want to replay that interview for you guys here coming up in just a little bit. I cannot believe that I had that bad of a slip. That's a tough one for me to stomach there a little bit. Is what it is. Sit back, relax. Got about a 10-minute interview here. Kyle Larson talking about racing, coming to the Speedway, what it's like in Kansas City. He actually says Kansas Speedway might be one of his favorite tracks in all of NASCAR.
Well, there's been 11 races in NASCAR. Top 10 in 8 of them. 7 times he's been top 5. 2 wins this year as well. He's also won twice at Kansas Speedway. Talking about Kyle Larson. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, we're doing good, man. So you're going to be throwing the first pitch out at Kauffman Stadium in a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I haven't done that in a while. But
it's not easy.
My daughter turned 7 yesterday, and she wanted to have a little baseball party, so we had a little scrimmage baseball game with her and her friends, so I got to throw the ball a little bit.
You know, it's one of those things too, Kyle. It's like, did you practice the distance you'll be throwing? Are we throwing from the hill, or will you move up a little bit?
I mean, if they let me throw from the hill,
okay,
they
will.
I feel like that's what you have to do. So
yeah, but you know how it is. He bounces it. It's gonna be social media and all that. You know how that works.
Yeah, I don't think I'll get too out of control though, like some of them. So
Well, it's cool to have you out there at Kauffman Stadium. Are you a baseball fan at all?
I would say, yeah. I mean, I'm a fan. I don't get to follow like every game. I mean, they play a ton, but
yeah.
Especially when the playoffs roll around, I think playoff baseball is super exciting. So, yeah, love watching that. And that's usually when my time of the year kind of is slowing down too, where I'm not racing so much dirt racing, and I can be at home on the couch watching or whatever.
Because you like racing anywhere and everywhere, Kyle. It's kind of how you're wired. And big thanks to NASCAR, too, and Matt Humphrey. You guys are awesome. We love having you on. We love having the Speedway right here in Kansas City, having two races a year. This is unbelievable. I've always wanted to ask guys, though, Kyle, and especially guys like you kind of at the top of your profession, like PGA players, it's tough on them, but they don't travel as much. Their caddy goes, they bring a couple bags of clubs and everything. But here you are throwing out the first pitch at Royal Stadium. You guys have sponsorship appearances and stuff to do during the week. Do you get to go home for like 48 hours or anything before you head to the next track?
Your typical kind of week is if you're only doing NASCAR, Cup Series racing, your typical week would be you fly to the track on Friday or fly to the state that you're racing on Friday. If you don't have any other, media obligations earlier in the week where you go earlier. We'll practice and qualify Saturday, race Sunday, and then you get home late Sunday night. Usually have meetings on Mondays, and then you have, whatever, you're doing to prep for the week ahead, the next few days. But for me, I'm a little different because I race, a lot of dirt track stuff outside of NASCAR. Yeah. So I'm usually, hopefully, home, one day a week, especially this time of year. I stay pretty busy, but I like it that way, being active and being in competition a lot, I think keeps me sharp. So I prefer to do that, but others kind of have their own way of going about things.
Kyle, I was driving in the day and someone was in the fast lane going like below the speed limit. It drives me nuts when people are doing that. And I once asked Joey Chestnut if he can go to a baseball game and just eat a hot dog because dude can eat like 80 of them in 10 minutes. What's it like for you actually like being on a road, like trying to drive like normally because you're used to going fast and you're always racing everywhere?
Yeah, that's a valid question that we get a lot. You're going 70 to 80 miles an hour probably on the interstate. On the racetrack, we're going 180 to 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you would think that the sensation is like crazy different, right? But really the sensation comes from the flow of the traffic. So, a lot of times, if you're going 70 on the interstate and somebody goes ripping by you at 80, or there's a few people that go, like, it feels like you're going a lot faster. So, I don't get the feeling ever of like, oh my gosh, I'm crawling on the road you're just going to go in the flow of the traffic
It drives me nuts. I don't know how you guys do it. I was sitting there going, I wonder what Kyle Larson does here in this situation, because it drives me nuts when someone's going slow. What about Kansas Speedway that you do so well at Kyle, because you've won twice here. Obviously it's been a good track for you in the past.
Yeah, no, it's a great track for us. And I really enjoy it. It's probably in my top three or five favorite tracks that we get to go to throughout the year. For one, I love the area. I love the state. I love the race fans here in Kansas and in the Midwest. But then the racetrack itself, it's got progressive banking. You can kind of, there's multiple lanes to run at the track. So you can kind of, if you catch somebody, you can move around and pass them a little easier than some of the tracks we go to. So, it's just fun, and our car is always fast here, so I enjoy coming here and racing, and we're usually up front, which is nice.
I'm curious, Kyle, because with this generation of car, we've seen some crazy finishes like the one a year ago where you just beat out Chris Buescher. NASCAR just announced the rotation of the championship race going forward. Is Kansas a place that you think could or you think would be fitting to have a championship race at in the future?
I mean, it would definitely produce a great race for the finale. Just the only problem is, geographically, November in Kansas, I feel like would probably be a little iffy on on weather. So that makes it tricky for our series and picking tracks to race at. You know, you kind of got to go to states that you can be a little more confident that the weather is going to be okay. So, you know, Florida or the West Coast, Arizona, California, you know, potentially like Texas, probably not even Texas, but Kansas, I don't know. I just think, you know, you'd hate to see it raining or snowing or freezing temperatures or whatever and, you know, delaying the race or anything like that. But it would for sure be the best probably racetrack. I would say Kansas or Homestead would be the best, you know, quality racing to decide a champion.
You mentioned, you know, your schedule and how busy you can be. I'm curious, with you trying to do the double again this year with the Indy 500 and the Coke 600, does it make your schedule, does it make you feel like your schedule is any more hectic with all the things that you have to do in terms of going back and forth in that week in particular? Or does it just feel like relatively similar to what you're used to with going to different tracks and doing different races throughout the season while also managing your regular Cup schedule?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, I think for your a normal guy doing the double, it might be busier, but for me, it's really not. It's kind of opposite. There's less back and forth than you think. You know, like I'll race here at Kansas this weekend, and then I'll head to Indy Sunday night, and then I'm there, you know, Sunday night through Sunday, I think, where, you know, then I'll go to North Wilkesboro to run the All-Star race and then come back. And then I'm back in Indy for pretty much the whole week and then go to Charlotte on Saturday, practice, qualify, come back to Indy, race, go to Charlotte and race. Where, you know, a normal week for me, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm gone early in the week, you know, racing dirt races, you know, sprint cars and stuff. So for me, the 2 weeks that I'm in Indy is like the only time all year I'm actually in the same spot for multiple days in a row. So it's actually pretty nice for me and really relaxing. That was, you know, surprising last year for me. And then I think for everybody, when I described it to them, that like my schedule was way easier last year than it typically is throughout the year.
Have you ever thought about F1, Kyle? Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs is invested as a part owner in an F1 team. I know that would be challenging with your schedule, but I'm just curious because you do like to run everything. Have you ever considered that?
Well, I mean, no, because realistically, I'll never have an opportunity to race in Formula One. The FIA makes it really difficult to even get a license to race. So you have to like earn points to get a license, and I think the FIA doesn't think very highly of American auto racing, so you don't get the opportunity to gain points to even qualify for a license. And then even if I did, like, that's not my background. So it would be difficult for me to get a ride, and you're not going to be in a top ride or anything like that. So no, I don't think I would ever get the chance to do it. But you know, it is what it is. That was never really my dream either. You know, growing up, my dream was always to, you know, race in the NASCAR Cup Series and, you know, someday down the road compete full-time in a nationally touring sprint car series. So I'm pretty content doing what I'm doing.
You just like to drive. That's awesome, man. You like to do this in your spare time. Good luck today with the first pitch at a Kauffman Stadium. Yeah, I mean, it's good that you practice too because, again, social media can be the devil sometimes.
Well, if I screw it up now after practicing, that's going to look really bad. So hopefully it goes smooth for me.
Good luck, Kyle. Enjoy your time in Kansas City. Good luck at the race this weekend.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
That was Kyle Larson earlier today joining Bank and myself and producer Drew Nixon talking about throwing out the first pitch at the Royals game today and racing at Kansas Speedway and everything he does within the realm of racing. He's considered one of the best in the sport right now. And for, you know, for his sake, I think it's good. I haven't seen or heard anything about his first pitch today, which is honestly not the worst news in the world, because typically if you have a poor first pitch, that's how you end up on social media all over the place. 913-586-7965 is our number. Right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. We'll come right back, answer more of your questions. We've got a lot more to talk about, including one of the greatest boxers of all time coming out of retirement for a title fight. My answer, my question, all of the above is why. We'll talk about that next, right here on your home for Kansas City sports. Well, I know what Alex Gold is hoping for out of his next card pack. Next time he goes about ripping some packs, and it's not going to be a Caitlin Clark card again, which he did pull a Caitlin Clark card for those who are unaware. Really, really rare one, like a one of one, quite literally. It's like a $15,000 to $25,000 card. But I know what his next one's going to be. This is from the Topps official Twitter page. Breaking. Pope Leo now has his own official trading card available now. The trading card company Topps has come out with a Pope Leo trading card. They also came out with a limited white smoke print with only 267 copies. So the man has a card and a limited card. American Pope has people doing outlandish things right now. Royals are winners of 15 of their last 17 games and now have their sights set on a series that begins at home tomorrow as they will host the other Sox. This group from Boston, the Boston Red Sox. Right now, Red Sox 20-19 on the year, Royals 23-16. Moneyline has Boston at minus 120. Versus Kansas City at even, which is an interesting one. The over-under is 9.5. Saying 9.5 is the line. I don't know. On the bump for these two teams, projected starters anyway, will be Hunter Dobbins for Boston and Michael Lorenzen for Kansas City, meaning Saturday's game, is projected as of now to be Cole Reagans against Garrett Crochet. That is a humdinger of a starting pitching matchup at Kauffman on Saturday. Sunday, it projected it's going to be Lugo against Lucas Giolito. Giolito is off to a very, very slow start this year. He's 0-1 with an 8.38 ERA. I'm actually going to be at the game on Sunday. So that's going to be fun. Looking forward to that. My wife and I are going to take my mother and father-in-law. My mother-in-law loves going to Royals games. So for Mother's Day, we're taking her to a game at Kauffman. And then we're also, my brother and sister-in-law are coming with us along with my niece and nephew. So it's going to be a good one. It's the first Royals game I've been to at Kauffman, probably in 5 years, which is insane, but I haven't lived in Kansas City in 5 years. You know, not since I was in college have I been to a Royals game, so I'm excited to get out to the K and watch the Royals play, especially in the midst of this outstanding streak that they're on right now. But the Red Sox aren't playing bad baseball themselves. Like I said, they are an above 500 baseball team. They've got some great pieces with Devers and Alex Bregman bringing him over. Although there are some, you know, there's some trouble in paradise when it comes to the Red Sox and one of their top talents in Rafael Devers, who says that he is still not interested in moving to first base. So Tristan Casas, it was the first baseman for the Boston Red Sox, but he ruptured a tendon in his left knee and is undergoing surgery. So he's out for the rest of the year. Devers, who has been the DH for the Red Sox this year after they signed Bregman and put him at third base, where Devers was previously at, has said he doesn't think it's in his best interest to switch positions and play first base. He was asked during spring training to move from third to DH and expressed a lot of concerns over it. And then ultimately said, okay, fine, I'll go DH. And after the game yesterday, or excuse me, after the game today, Red Sox beat the Rangers 5-0. He said, quote, they came to me and talked to me about it. I know I'm a ball player, but at the same time, they can't expect me to play every single position out there. In spring training, they talked to me and basically told me to put away my glove. I wasn't going to play another position other than DH. Right now, I don't think it would be an appropriate decision by them to ask me to play another position. Okay, first things first. Let's go to the top of the comment there. Top of the quote. I know I'm a ball player, but at the same time, they can't expect me to play every single position out there. You played third. They asked you to DH, which is technically not a different position. You're not playing a position. You're a designated hitter. And now they're asking you to play first base. Okay, man, that's two positions. Okay, they're not asking you to play the entire infield and outfield, my guy. All right, they're not asking you to go from first base to center field. It's third to first. You've got good size. You're athletic enough. You can absolutely play first base. It's just the other hot corner. It makes the most sense when a team's first baseman goes down if they don't feel confident in a prospect or a rotational guy to be their everyday first baseman to take the guy from third and put him at first, especially when you're already not playing third base because Alex Bregman's there. Devers said that he spoke with the Red Sox chief baseball officer, Craig Breslow, about the prospect of playing first base. For now, it sounds like, however, the Red Sox are going to be going with Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro as sort of a platoon system at first base. Gonzalez is hitting .308 so far this season in limited at-bats. And by limited, I mean only 52 ABs in 17 games this year. Toro is hitting .111. In 9 at-bats so far for Boston. So he's 1 of 9 at the dish to begin this year, the 28-year-old. So, I don't know. It feels a little diva-like for Rafael Devers in this sense. Do what the team asks you to do, right? I mean, listen, I know he's a prospect and it's not quite the same situation, but Jack Caglione has every right to be like, no, I'm not going to play right field. I want to play first base. I'm a first baseman. All I know is first base. I'm playing first base. No, I'm not going to play right field. But he knows that that's what's required, firstly, for him to get to the show quicker, and secondly, that's what's most effective in helping this Royals team win. Devers making the move to first base might be what's required to help this Red Sox team win best, but he's unwilling to do so. Then again, in his defense, right, just trying to play devil's advocate to both sides here, Rafael Devers has never played first base in the big leagues. Not one inning. Zero innings as a first baseman in Major League Baseball. Devers, he got a little spicy during this interview, during these little snippets here. He offered a suggestion to the Red Sox. And Breslow, who was a major league pitcher for 12 years, said, quote, now they should do their jobs essentially and hit the market and look for another player. I'm not sure what they want, why they want me to be an in-between. Next thing you know, someone in the outfield gets hurt and they want me to play in the outfield. I know the kind of player that I am, and that's where I stand. Good Lord. Hey, Rafael Devers, I don't know who you think you are. You're a good player. Been to a couple of All-Star games. I think you're overvaluing where you're at right now, my guy. It's been to 3 All-Star games, 2021, 2022, and last year in 24. Good hitter. Career 278 average. He's got over 200 bombs. But boy, I think you're digging your heels in a battle that you shouldn't be. Just one man's opinion. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 2. Make sure you stick around. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Somebody didn't get the memo. 4 hours ago, the Chicago Cubs official Twitter page put out a post. Congrats to Pope Leo XIV. It's the Wrigley Field sign. Home of the Chicago Cubs. Hey, Chicago. He's a Cubs fan. No, he isn't. His brother and a literal news article of him on video says the new Pope is a White Sox fan. Walked right into that one, Cubbies. Not a great look. Not a great look. But what is a great look? Bobby Witt Jr. According to OptiStats, over the last five games for the Royals, Bobby Witt Jr. has 10 hits, 8 RBIs, 6 extra base hits, 4 stolen bases, 2 home runs, and a walk-off. Over a five-game span, that's never been done in the history of Major League Baseball. Bobby Witt Jr., first player in MLB history to have 10 hits, 8 RBIs, 6 extra base hits, 4 stolen bags, 2 homers, and a walk-off in the span of 5 games. That's Bobby Baseball, folks. Hour number 3 of After Hours coming your way next. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. More to get to. Famous fighter coming out of retirement. The Panthers making some off-season moves, most of them bad. Where does ESPN have the Royals in their latest MLB power rankings? And what's going on with the NHL as they get deeper into the playoffs? All that's coming up next right here on 96.5 The Fan.